Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso, and I hope you've been enjoying the first couple of episodes that I've recently released. I really want to create a community for women, so please go to investormama.com/connect. That's investormama.com/connect. I'll put a link to this in the show notes. But here you can join the Facebook group. You can also leave me feedback on ways to improve the show, questions you may have, and anything else you'd like to share. Also, if you have not already done so, please subscribe and leave a review or a written review on the platform that you are listening to. I'd really appreciate it as it helps to grow the show and helps put the show in front of a wider audience. So thank you in advance. Now, for today's episode, we're here with Tiffany Grant, owner of Money Talk with Tiff. Tiffany is a single millennial and money strategist. She has successfully juggled completing her MBA and studying for her financial planner certification, all while taking care of her two young boys. Tiffany has also eliminated over $50,000 in debt, which she got rid of in a little over a year. We'll definitely dive more into this in the show. And in December of 2017, Tiffany launched the Money Talk with Tiff podcast. Its sole purpose is to help other people increase their financial literacy and take control of their money. I highly encourage you to check it out and also her website. It's Money Talk with T as in Tiff. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And so without further ado, Tiffany, welcome to today's episode. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you, Jen?
Great. Thanks. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a real pleasure to chat with you today.
Absolutely. I'm excited.
So Tiffany, before we jump in, I'd love to hear some of your backstory. How did you get started with money?
So it all started when I was just a young girl. No, I'm just kidding. but seriously though, I remember being really little, maybe as young as 5 or 6. And I would ask my grandma what she was making for dinner. I would go make up a little menu, and used to be Tiffany's Little Restaurant, and make like 5 cents an entree or something like that. But I would walk around, take orders, serve everybody, come around with my piggy bank. And so ever since I was little, I always loved money and having a business mind. And as I got older, it just got more intensified. So I can remember when I was 16, when I got my first job, my mom was like, all right, well, now it's time for you to pay your own car notes. So I had to figure out how to make my little $7.25 stretch. And so I had got into couponing and just saving a lot of money. And the way I was then has not changed. I still am the same person that just wants to save a lot of money. And people used to ask me all the time, like friends and family, like, hey, Tiffany, what do you think about this? I know you're smart with money. Do you have any advice on this? And then I was like, you know what, instead of doing all these one-off conversations, let me just make a website and a blog and put it out on the World Wide Web. And that way more people can read about it. It's super important that we talk about money more, because right now it's just a taboo topic. And because of that, we're in the dire straits that we are now. Because if nobody's talking about it, how are we supposed to learn about it? So that's how Money Talk with Tiff got started in a nutshell.
That's awesome. And tell me I know in your bio, you have two young children. Can you tell me how old they are and how your journey, are you financially independent now? Or are you still on the path to financial independence?
So I'm still on the path to pay off my debt. So I'm 28 currently, and I want to be debt free by 30. So fingers crossed, I still have about 50,000 left. But my boys, one is 10 and one is 5. I was a teen mom. So I was pregnant in my senior year of high school and had my son when I was 18. And I feel that played a big role in where I am today, because I had to learn how to save money and how to make money stretch and work constantly. And if I decided that I wanted to get my degrees, which I did, I had to make sure, you know, everything worked. It was a lot of juggling and it was a lot of time management and things that I was able to carry on to career. So I feel having my kids, even though it was a struggle at times, I feel it was well worth it because they just gave me that little extra oomph that I needed.
And how you said you pay off $50,000 in debt already. How did you manage that?
Right. So that is a combination of car, credit cards, and my undergraduate student loans. So that's what comprises the over $50,000 at this point. What's left is my graduate degree. So that's about $51,000, I believe. But how I did it, a lot of it was just making sure I budgeted. I know people hate talking about budgets. I know. But
Don't we all?
But I will say that was my saving grace, because if I didn't know how much was coming in and don't know how much is going out, there was no way that I could reallocate the funds to paying off debt or saving or whatever the case may be. So budgeting played a huge role in my success with paying off debt, and then also having discipline, because there was plenty of times where I could take an alternate route and, like, you know, oh, this $100, let me go buy an outfit or something like that. And I'm like, no, I need to pay off debt. This is my goal. This is what I'm going to do. And there is no plan B. There is no derailing from that. I have to do what I have to do. So anyway, and of course, a lot of side hustles.
Yeah, which I definitely want to jump into more, but really quickly to clarify. So you had what, over $100,000 of debt coming out of school, give or take, with your car?
Well, so I had different debts at different times, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So, I mean, if looking back at it now, yeah, it would equal to $100,000, but it was never like $100,000 all at once, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, even just $50,000 with two boys, being a single mom, what would be going through your head? Were you scared at that point? Were you ever worried about making ends meet or putting food on the table?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can remember times where I was living off of the student loans, which is why the debt had got so high with my undergrad, was because I needed the student loans to pay up our rent, to make sure we had a roof over our head, to make sure we had clothes on our back, things of that nature. So there was even a time where I was in undergrad and I was working two jobs just to make ends meet. So it has always been a struggle, but it didn't matter how much money I made. We were still taken care of and we were still happy and we're still a little family.
So I want to dive a little further into this, because I know there's a lot of people out in our audience who are married, not even single, and you know, mothers out there who maybe they come with a lot of student loan debt, or they and their spouses combined come with a lot of student loan debt. What were some of the strategies you'd use to pay down? Obviously the budget. Did you do any debt consolidation? How much above the student loan were you paying per month to really knock it out? Walk me through your thought process and your action steps.
Yeah, sure. So I paid off a lot of it while I was already in school. So after I graduated, let me see, while I was in undergrad, I paid off a little bit of it. But after I graduated undergrad and went into my master's, that's when I started hitting it hard, because mind you, I was working the whole time. So of course my career was progressing as well. So by the time I got to my master's degree, I was at a pretty well-paying job. So then I could go ahead and start tackling it a little more heavier. But outside of that, I used a combination of the avalanche and the snowball method. So I used the avalanche method when it was the credit cards, because I knew that they had the highest interest rate. But then once I got all the credit cards out the way and the car out the way, Then when I was working on my student loans, I switched to the snowball method. And just in case the audience doesn't know what I'm talking about and it's all gibberish.
I was just going to ask you to explain.
Right.
One step ahead.
The avalanche method is when you look at what has the highest interest rate and you pay that down first, and then you use what you were paying on that, and then you roll it over to the next one. You go from big and then you just keep rolling it down. And then the snowball method is when you take the lowest balance first. It doesn't matter what the interest rate is, just the lowest balance. And then you pay that one off, and then you roll what you were paying on that one into the next highest and the next highest and do it that way. So both strategies are awesome, but the snowball method is more psychological. So when you start seeing those debts being paid off, then you're like, oh my gosh, I got this. And it propels you to the next one. Because with the avalanche method, what if your highest interest rate is the biggest amount as well? Then you're going to feel like you're paying forever. And then you might get discouraged. So that's why I did a combination of the two, just depending on what the debt was.
Did you pay for any courses to get this financial knowledge, or did you learn it on your own?
No, everything is self-taught. I started reading financial magazines at 17, 18, and I've just loved it. I just immersed myself in all the magazines, all the books, all the blogs, all the YouTube videos, just everything. And I call myself a money nerd. I'm a huge money nerd.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah. So I've never had anybody, especially my family, to take me under their wing and teach me all of this stuff. All of this stuff I learned on my own. Yeah, just being proactive, I guess.
Oh, that's amazing. So for other moms who are out there listening to this, who may actually have a lot of student loan debt, is there any tips or advice that you can give them?
Yeah, sure. So my main piece of advice is to just start. Don't get caught up in how much it is. I've had clients that had 300,000 plus in student loans. Yeah, it's out there. So that also goes to say, don't think that it doesn't matter how much you have. There's always someone with worse. Because even the $300,000 person, there's someone out there with $500,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just start. Don't get paralyzed by the number. And also make sure that you're paying something, because I do have other clients that just got scared and they're like, I don't want to pay this. And then it goes into delinquent status and then they start taking your tax refund. You know, you don't want that to happen. So that's my biggest piece of advice. But practically, definitely know what your loan terms are as well. Also know the ways that your loans can be discharged or forgiven. A lot of people don't think about that, but I just did a podcast episode on it just to enlighten people on the ways. Unfortunately, I wasn't eligible for any of those, but they're out there. There are ways. So definitely check that out and just stay in contact with the student loan servicer, because even if you can't make your payment, just call them and let them know, hey, I can't make my payment. They're more than willing to work with you rather than you just ignoring it. And then it goes into delinquent status and then it hurts your credit score.
That's awesome. Well, we'll definitely put a link to that episode in our show notes. And just to clarify, so you said that you had clients that had a lot of loan debt. What kind of profession? Is this like your full-time job that you're working at?
Yeah. So I just quit corporate. I was.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I was working at a financial firm, but no, these are actually clients that I have under Money Talk with Tiff that were one-on-one clients. So yeah. That's what that is.
Looking for a side hustle that's flexible, doesn't take a ton of time, and can generate some serious cash? I'm talking an extra $1,000 to $2,000 a month. Well, creating Facebook ads is the perfect thing for you. Not sure what that is or how you can actually profit? Check out the Facebook ad course created by Mike Yonda and Bobby Hoyt from Laptop Empires. This course teaches you step by step on how to profit from helping businesses and individuals with their Facebook ads. I personally purchased the course and went through it. Check out the link in the show notes to get more information on their course. So today's episode, I did want to dive into some 529s. I know you have been starting to save for your boys. What is a 529 plan?
Yeah, sure. So just a brief story just to get my why this came up for me. So this year, actually, on my birthday in March, I was sitting there doing a financial plan for myself, just re-upping what I already had, because of course I'm a money nerd. So that's how I spend my birthday. Sounds so horrible now, right? It's like I have no life. But, so for my birthday, I was looking at my financial plan. I'm like, okay, let's see where we're at. And when I was running the numbers, the boys' education was going to kill my plan. So if I had their college paid for without tapping into my investments and stuff like that, then my chance of having a dollar by the time I'm 96 was super high. But if I had to start tapping into my investments, I was down until 4 or 5% chance of success. So with that said, I'm like, okay, I know the boys said that they want to go to school. Let me go ahead and just take their savings that's been in a bank account for forever, a little savings account, and roll that into a 529. So hopefully I can get a higher return than I'm getting on the savings account. So that's where my thought process came from. So a 529 is an educational savings account. So you can open it for anyone. It doesn't have to be your kids. It can be grandkids. It can be nieces. It can be nephews. It doesn't matter who you open it for, but you can use it for any educational expense. So tuition, room and board, supplies, things like that. And also they made it so that you can use it for K-12 education as well. So if your kids are going to a private school or something that you have to pay for, you can also use a 529 for that. So once you have a 529, first of all, you can open it in any state. You don't have to open it with your state's 529. So for instance, I'm in North Carolina. North Carolina has a 529 plan. I decided that I wanted to open it with Utah because I liked Utah's plan better. I like their investment options better. So I have a Utah 529. Now, what you want to keep in mind is there's usually tax benefits for opening it in your state. Unfortunately, North Carolina doesn't have a really good one. So so I was like, yeah, I'm looking elsewhere.
What do you mean by tax benefits?
Right. So when you open a 529 and you're putting money in North Carolina, they make it so that you get a tax break for putting money. I mean, not in North Carolina, in other states that are better than North Carolina. No, I'm just kidding. they give you a tax break when you file your taxes for putting money into that 529.
I know New York does that, but I don't believe New Jersey does. Do you know of any resources that would show state by state which provides tax benefits?
That's a good question. I think so the tax benefits only matter if you're putting into a state that you're already in. So I would just check with your state, whatever state that may be, and see if they have a tax benefit. And if not, you can just shop anywhere because at that point it's not going to matter. So hopefully that didn't confuse you.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Since I wasn't going to get a tax benefit from North Carolina, I chose Utah because I like their investment options better. Their investment options were top notch. So they have access to DFA, which is Dimensional Fund Advisor funds, which are the top in the industry, in my opinion. And also they have American funds, which is the second top, in my opinion. So to invest in those options through Utah, Virginia actually has a pretty good plan as well. They have access to American funds. And just to give a brief on how the tax benefits work. So if you are in, let's say you live in Virginia, and they have a tax benefit where whatever you put into the 529, you're able to get a tax credit when you file your taxes for it. And there are quite a few states that do that. what I would recommend is just check in with your estate plan first, just to make sure you're not missing out on that tax benefit. And then if they don't have it, just, you can go anywhere.
No, that's great advice. Thank you. Can you just explain what the American funds are and the DFA?
Yeah, so those are just mutual fund companies. So they create mutual funds. And I personally like DFA because they use empirical data.
What does DFA stand for, actually?
Dimensional Fund Advisors. And what I like about them is not everybody can invest in them. So they're very picky with what advisors or which plans or whatever are able to invest with them. So that's a plus. And then two, you have to go through their training and you have to know their methodology. And it's very just rigorous. And that's the only way you can get to invest with them. So unfortunately, you can't invest in DFA like if you were to just go through like a Charles Schwab or a Fidelity or whatever. You have to have an advisor that's authorized to invest in those funds. The founders are all Nobel Prize laureates.
Oh, wow.
If that tells you anything.
Good for them.
And when I was in my graduate degree program, I took an investments course, and my professor, he screamed their praises from the mountaintops. At the time, I had no idea why he was so fanatic about them. But then when I got my first job in a firm, they used DFA. And then I was like, okay, so this is the creme de la creme.
I've actually never heard of them. So it's an actual mutual fund?
It's a mutual fund company. So they have quite a few different funds for different things. They have small cap, mid cap, large cap. And I might be getting a little too technical with everything.
But yeah, I feel for some of our listeners, what is a small cap? Because I just learned it too recently. So it could be all gibberish. Right. You want to give a quick one-liner about what each is, just really quickly to clarify?
Sure. So large cap, so that means large capitalization. Those are the biggest companies on the stock exchange. And then you have mid cap, which is middle. And then you have small cap, which are the smaller companies. Now, when I say small, they're not really small. They're still making billions of dollars.
but small cap companies.
No, we're not a small cap.
not yet, at least.
Right. But in the grand scheme of things, they're a small cap. They have a small capitalization in comparison.
When you were doing your research, did you find other states besides Utah were messing with DFA?
Not that I know of. That's not to say that there isn't any out there, but I know Utah has a really good plan. And then Virginia has a really good plan as well. I don't think they have DFA, but they have American Funds, which is another mutual fund company that creates funds. So yeah. And I mean, and if this is too much, if this goes over your head, if you invest in a 529, they also do something like a target date fund. Usually when people have retirement accounts, they pick a target date fund based on their retirement date. They have the same option for 529s as well. So you just choose how old your kid is, and then it'll automatically adjust for you.
That's great. If I wanted to go online and open an account, where would I go?
So it depends on whatever state you want to open it in. Usually the state has their own website. Utah, their website is my529.org. And so it just depends on whatever state you decide to open it in. They'll have their own website. But it's so simple. You just go on, fill out a quick application, and then voila, it's open. And then all you have to do is fund it. I also like Utah's, and I'm not sure if anybody else does it, but I like theirs because it has an option where I can send links to family and friends. So it's in lieu of buying them all this plastic toys that they're never going to use. Here is a link to contribute to their future and make sure my financial plan works.
that's great, because you're reading my soul here, and I hate gifts for our daughter because it goes in the garbage after a year, if it even makes it that long. I would much rather send a link and say, hey,
instead of buying this that's going to be useless in a month or two, why don't you actually contribute to their college education or any other type of school that they want to? We invest in the 529 through New York because I work in New York City and I can get the deduction. They too also allow you to send gifts or send an email link as a gift in lieu instead of actual objects or toys that other family members or friends can contribute. But I feel like it's a taboo in this world. I don't know why. Some, especially when you have young kids, people feel like they need to get you an actual tangible gift instead of contributing. I'm curious if you've had success in getting family members or friends to contribute to your boys' funds and what strategies did you use to get them there?
Honestly, nobody has.
We're in the same boat.
Well, nobody has contributed knowingly. Let's put it that way.
I see. Yeah, because I'll be honest. I feel like a jerk sometimes saying, "Hey, here's a link. I know you want to see the joy in our daughter's eyes when she opens the present, but can you please contribute here instead? Because that'll be more productive of an option."
Yeah, nobody knowingly has contributed to their 529, but if they get any money for birthdays, Christmas, or whatever, so I teach my boys save, spend, and donate. So they have to spend a little, they have to save a little, and they have to donate a little every time they get some money. So I take out what they're going to save and I stick it into the 529. And then of course they get the spins and then they get to donate some. So
that's fantastic. What happens? I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. What if my child decides not to go to college and I put all this money into her fund? And come 18 years from now, she's, you know, like, "Mom and Dad, I decide I want to start a business or I want to join the army or I want to go to a trade school." What happens to the 529 then? Did we lose all that money?
No, you don't. So that was my other thing that I wanted to go over. You can always change beneficiaries. And it also doesn't have to be a child. So let's say your child doesn't want to go to school. You can either save that money for grandkids or any other relative you have. Or if you wanted to use that money, you could. It's not tied to any one beneficiary. You can always change it.
So does a child have to be born to open up a 529 or can I like open up one for my non-existing grandkids right now?
You can open up how you would do it because they do ask for like when you name a beneficiary, just like if you were to do it for like a 401k or whatever, they're going to ask for social or whatever. But what you can do is open one for yourself, for instance. And then when you have a child, you can just change the beneficiary to them.
So you could, this could be a vehicle. If you do have a tax benefit for doing this, you could theoretically then start now for your grandkids, just let it ride out. And then come 30 years from now or whatever, your grandkids' college will, assuming you make the average, 7% tracking the market, your grandkids are set for school if they decide to go.
Yep, absolutely. And so for instance, I thought this through because I was like, I don't want my money tied up. Like, what if, you know, he's like, never mind. But I was like, you know what? I have a little sister that might need help. If I have grandkids or I have nephews and nieces that may come about, it'll never go to waste, whatever it is. There's always somebody that can benefit. And like I said, it can go for anybody. So
yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. And also, even if you start spending it on one person, and let's say all of their education is paid for now, and you still have money left, you can just change the beneficiary and spend it on somebody else.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's pretty flexible.
From your personal standpoint, do you think people should, if they have a lot of debt, pay off their debt first and then invest in their kids' education or do both simultaneously or one or the other? I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
So I believe in saving for yourself first. The only reason my kids have a 529 is because they already had savings. I'm not really adding any new money in it other than what they get from other people. because I need to save for my retirement. I need to pay off my debt because I need to make sure that I'm taken care of in the long run. You know what I mean? The kids will always be taken care of. And then also, when they get old and grown and they have their own jobs and they're making their own money, then who's going to take care of me?
That is like, so true.
Yeah, I need to make sure that I'm taken care of. And also, I wouldn't want to be a burden to them as well. So I want to make sure that I have all my savings and ducks in a row and all my debt paid off. So that way, later on down the road, they don't have to worry about me. They can go on with their life. They can worry about their kids and their spouses, things like that. So that's what I think a lot long term.
I agree with you 100%. And that's why we fund a little bit into our daughter's 529, but it's only after we save for our retirements and our future first, because I don't want to be a burden on her either. I 100% agree with that.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's my thought process. Of course, everybody has different philosophies and thinking, but that's just how I look at things.
Well, that's awesome. Tiffany, thank you so much for explaining the 529 and the benefits and how it can be used. I think a lot of my listeners out there are going to have some real takeaways that they can actually implement for their own kids and their own families. But before we wrap up today's episode, I'd like to start the lightning round.
Uh-oh.
These are the same four questions that I ask all of my guests. And so I appreciate you playing along. First question is, what is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
Well, being that my life is pretty much an open book, people may or may not know this already, but I'm a gamer. I love video games. I've always played video games my entire life. And I also love guns. I love going to the range. I actually used to practice competition. I was training to be a target shooter. So...
Wow, look at you.
So those are my two, I know you used to ask for one, but those are some two fun facts about me.
That's awesome. I got it. So what was it like shooting a gun? I've never done it.
I love, like for my 21st birthday, I was in the range because in North Carolina, you have to be 21 to go to the range. So as soon as I turned 21, there I was.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's relaxing. It's a hobby. It's a sport. So I really enjoy it.
That's cool. All right. Well, question number two, who inspires you the most and why?
Who inspires me the most? My kids. I know that sounds cliche, but
no, that's really sweet.
But really they do, because when I wake up every day, I'm like, okay, what can I do to make our lives better? Not just me, but the kids as well. So they are my inspiration. And just to get a little more into my story, I struggle with depression and anxiety. And I've been like that my whole life. I was clinically diagnosed with severe long-term depression and anxiety. And I feel like my kids have saved my life, literally. I've tried to kill myself multiple times. And after I had my kids, I didn't really try anymore because you have somebody else to live for. And so anyway, they're my inspiration.
Wow, that is really, really powerful. And I really appreciate you sharing that. Thank you. I think what you just said is going to inspire many people out there. So really, thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
No problem. Like I said, I'm an open book all the time.
I really appreciate you sharing that. Well, question number three, what book are you reading now or have read and loved that you'd recommend for others?
Let's see. Financial-wise, money-wise, I love I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. That was one of the books where I was reading it and working on the action steps as I was reading it. Some books are laid out like that, but you're like, yeah, read, blah, 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 blah. And then you get to the end. And then you really don't do the action steps. But his book was so practical. I would read a part of a chapter and then I'm on the phone with the credit card company. Like, you know what I mean? So
wow, that's great.
Yeah. So I really enjoy his book. Now, when it comes to outside of money, per se. I love How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think that's by Napoleon Hill.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah, I really enjoy that book as well, because at the end of the day, you have to know how to be the best networker or influencer you can, regardless of what you're doing in life. So that book was really cool too. So.
Great. And the last question, what is one actionable tip or piece of advice that you tell our moms out there to help them on their financial independence journey?
Just start. It doesn't matter where you are. Just get going. Because a lot of times, especially as moms, we get into this analysis paralysis. Like, we have to make sure we get everything right when it comes to raising our kids, when it comes to tackling our finances, when it comes to being a good spouse or partner or girlfriend, whatever you are. We just feel like we have to get it right all the time. And the thing is, if you just start, if you just do it and then learn as you go, you'll make more progress than if you were to just analyze everything and wait and then get started. So that's the philosophy I live
preach
by.
It.
Yeah. I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna do this. And if it doesn't work, then there's a lesson. If it does work, then yay, we made it. So, so that would be my biggest piece of advice.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Tiffany, so much for coming on. How can my listeners connect with you if they want to follow up?
Yeah, sure. So you can visit my website, moneytalkwitht.com. Also on social media, everywhere on social media is at Money Talk with T. And then also my podcast, Money Talk with Tiff, and it's on all listening platforms.
Well, Tiffany, thank you so much for coming on today's show. I really appreciate it. And I know my listeners do as well. For you, those of you listening, I hope that you actually take some steps and really investigate your own state's 529 plans and see what works best for you and your families. Tiffany, again, thank you so much.
No problem, Jen. Anytime.
This is Jen Narciso. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you liked today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.